Welcome back to the Ride and Laugh podcast. If you love mountain biking, you are in the right place. Picture your last group ride. You had a ton of fun. You're back at the parking lot. The stoke is high. Everyone's talking bikes, nutrition, tech, gear. That's what we do here every week. We love bikes. You love bikes. Let's drop in. Sage, how are you today, my friend?
Man, I am doing awesome. I mean, we just, what a great week. We launched officially to the public, and yeah, the reception has been awesome. I think we had something like 150 views on YouTube, like 60 subscribers, 170 downloads across all podcasting platforms. And we even had like listeners from across the globe. I think the farthest one that I could see was Australia. So
thank you, Australia. Yeah.
So good. It's so good to know that this was welcomed and well received. Dan, I know you got some comments from some of our listeners too, right?
Yeah, we got comments. We appreciate everybody listening and giving us a nice review and giving and subscribing on the YouTube. It's awesome. And we've been asking for comments. We want a community. We want people to interact. We want to know what's going on. And you guys are going to give us some new topics and some things to talk about and some feedback. And we got some really, really cool comments. Just to peruse here, we have Nick Lusky, and he said that Mount Penn Skyline jumps that we talked about recently, yes, are kind of a bucket list item for him. He understands Sage's hesitancy on the steep lips. But then he was talking about not needing to follow someone in. And he went to Bentonville and he did drop the hammer without a lead in by himself, yes, no toe. And that's a really big drop. So nice job there, Nick. And that's on my bucket list. Definitely Bentonville sounds awesome. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have been there. Ben Heck Spokes, yeah, mountain bike, which Steve, is our buddy Steve, and he had some awesome feedback. He's big on at the jumps at Sears, and he helped Sage and Stick ride through those. And so he was talking about jumping, and one of the things that he says to himself is his words of encouragement is, "You're a good jumper. You got this." And one of the things I really like that I think I'm going to take is that he tells himself, "I have good instincts in the air." Yes. Which is, I thought was really cool. You know, you get scared when you're in the air, right? You don't want to become that dead sailor. And so instead you just start, you know, hey, I got good instincts in the air. You're that I am power. I am good at jumping mountain bikes, making it happen. All right. And then Logan, who is one of our local riders, Burke's Trail Works, all around awesome, yes, dude. And he was telling us about his visualization and that he prefers to watch someone do it instead of getting towed in. And he had a lot of really great feedback. One of the interesting things that I thought that he said that we hadn't talked about was when in the ride he wants to try a new feature.
Yeah.
And so he said he likes to do it early in the ride when he's fresh, before he's tired, which makes a lot of sense. What do you think, Sage? When do you like to hit a new feature?
Yo, I don't know that I'd actually put like a time constraint on it, but I definitely... Hans Ray, actually, Logan was there, and he was one of the guys that actually helped us get through that feature. But like that happened for me, not because of when it happened in the ride, but because you and I had like stacked so many wins together before getting to that feature. It just so happened to be toward the end of the ride. But I think it's less about the amount of time and just the confidence level up into that point. So if we're riding really well, I'm ready to go.
You got to get there before you're tired, right? So if you wait too long.
Yeah.
And you're tired, you're having a hard time focusing, or your body's just not responding the way you need it to, then abort. Yes. But yeah, I think I'm probably middle towards the end of a ride, middle of the ride. Certainly I need to warm up. I need to get some wins and get some confidence. But I know we've done things early in a ride and we've done some pretty high consequence things. And then just adrenally, you're like, okay, I just want to pedal around now. I'm done. Yes. I'm ready to go get breakfast. Like I'm just mentally already exhausted. So, you know, maybe you want to save that, that burnout until the end of the ride, but, whatever works. And if you're good enough to do it early in the ride, when you're fresh and you don't need to warm up, like Sage and apparently like Logan, then yeah, go for it. But that, I thought that was an interesting, thing. I definitely like to get my momentum going, and stacking those wins. And then we had a really nice message from Mark, who just said that the pod's awesome and he looks forward to each episode. And, that's really cool. So flattery might get you mentioned on the podcast as well. So thank you, Mark. Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out Mark. And speaking of flattery, Dan, you were on a little bit of a press tour this week.
Yes. The Ride and Laugh Junket. is that the wrong word? That might be the wrong word. I have no idea. But yeah, I got invited to be on a live webcast with Johnny Yu, and his show is called Mountain Bike Q&A. And yes. He's got Trail Sage has been on as a kind of a big deal in this area. You know what I mean? Trail Sage has been on. He knew Johnny and he had sent Johnny some of the podcast before we even went live. And Johnny said, I got to interview Dan. And Johnny's interviewed all sorts of really kind of high profile people in our little mountain bike world. So I was very, very flattered and super nice guy. I had a ton of fun. We did it last night. So we're recording this on a Thursday. We did it on Wednesday. If you want to see it, just go into YouTube. I think it will also be on your podcast players at Mountain Bike Q&A or maybe MTB Q&A. We should check that. And then, but you can also see it on YouTube and you can see everyone's comments because it was a live feed. So that's kind of fun also. So if you go to Mountain Bike Q&A and you click on podcast, it'll come there. It may not be in the video profile. That's what I saw today, but it was a lot of fun. Great guy, yeah. Really good interviewer. Comments were hilarious. We talked for about 90 minutes and, you know, dude loves mountain biking. So, you know, he's my kind of people. I thought it was great. You watched this, Age. What did you think?
Man, I was, first of all, Johnny's the best. Like, I totally agree. I mean, he's just so easy to talk to. Really funny guy. Just really naturally funny guy. But I thought the interview went really well. And it's not just about the Ride and Laugh podcast. He got into your history, your background. And I know you pretty well. And I still found it, like, extremely fascinating. So if you are interested in getting to know Dan or Danny, it's a great way to kind of really get an in-depth view to what makes you tick. So I really enjoyed that.
I bet it was refreshing for you to see me telling someone else to get a gratitude journal. That must have been a nice moment for you. Like, oh, good. Like, he's not yelling at me about writing gratitude down. Now he's giving Johnny a... But at the end of the show, Johnny picks up a journal. He's sold. He's ready.
He's in. Ride and read.
The ride and read. That's right. Ride and read. Throwback from another episode. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we didn't get a lot of rides in together recently because the weather has been very, very poor. And then I was in Arizona for a week with my wife. And if you listen to the interview with Johnny, you would know that I have we bought a little investment property out there about 5-6 years ago on my wife's recommendation. We have family out there. She said, we should buy a place out here. It's a good investment. And I was really nervous until she said, you know, you could buy a mountain bike and keep it out here. And I was like, oh, well then, yeah, I think it's a really good idea that we buy a house and it just happens to come with a Yeti, you know? So that's great. You know, I put that on a Strava feed one time that my house in Arizona came with the Yeti. And I remember Stick being like, really? Do they do that out there? Like, no, Stick, it's not real. But I think it'd be a really awesome selling point, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe, maybe we're onto something. We know a couple of realtors. We can, you know, sweeten the pot.
Shout
here.
Out Brian. Yeah. Yeah. Brian, yeah. Easy Trader. Yeah.
That's right. And Betts, our buddy Betts is a realtor too.
That's right.
Different states, not competing. Yeah. So we go to Arizona quite often and I do have a mountain bike there and I ride. There's awesome trails in the Phoenix area. A lot of tech, a lot of things that I really like. So I went and I rode South Mountain. I ride them. I have a national trail loop that I do there, which is awesome. And then I rode Gold Canyon, which has a double black, really tough line, which I did 90% of. And then I also rode Halls Boulder Dash, which is a newer double black tech line. And yeah. They those rides all kind of build on each other, and I was getting more and more confident as I went. I was stacking wins each ride, and feeling better and better. And was, I was using all the mantras we've been talking about as far as feeling, trusting my skills and being able to access my skills by becoming grounded. And just the word I was using was trust or commit. You got this. And staying low and weight over my bottom brackets. And so I felt like there was a little bit of nice progression there. I felt I was feeling really good by the end of the trip, and it was a lot of fun. The riding out there is very, very different. It's a beautiful time of year out there. It's very, very different. It's very, very chunky. And I love it. It's really fun. And, you know, the weather's fantastic. So
you, when you're out there, Danny, you're mostly solo. I mean, are you having to approach your rides a little bit different because you're solo? Because usually it's you and I feel like a sense of safety, you know, it's like an encouragement. Like, how many times do we like turn to each other? Like, yo, I got this, right? Like, you got no one else to like tell you, yo, you got this. It's all on you.
There's a lot of moments where I'm like, next time Sage visits, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of those moments. And one of those moments was riding down the waterfall on National Trail.
Yeah.
And I had never done it before. I had looked at it 100 times. There's other downhill lines on that trail. I ride that trail all the way out, to anyone that knows that, to Telegraph, and then take the road back up and then loop around and ride National all the way back to the lot. And there's other downhills in that line, in that route, that I think are probably harder. But this, the waterfall is iconic. First of all, climbing up it is epically hard. And you know, it's almost a trials move, though. We did recently see someone actually pedal up it, which was really encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah.
On Instagram. And then when I got up to it, it was like, it's starting to feel like maybe this is possible, but my God, it is so hard. It is so much power. It is so many tight moves. If having like the trials moves would really help to be able to hop around. So anyways, but going down it is also a kind of, it's also scary. It's steep.
Yeah.
And if you fall off of it, you're going to get hurt. There's a very distinct line and it's not really smooth. The ending looks a little bit janky and that always kind of threw me off. And it's definitely one of those things where you kind of don't see the line until you roll right up onto it.
Yeah.
And so I had ridden that set many, many times before we did our Arizona trip. So, and I had always walked down it. I looked at it. I thought I could do it, but I just always walked down it and I'm by myself. So I'm not taking any chances of, you know, getting a catastrophic injury, or at least not on purpose, out in Arizona by myself. And so then when you came out to visit and we did a week long trip out there, and you know, Sage took one look at it. We walked to the top. First, Sage wanted to climb it. Many, you tried really hard to climb it. Didn't get anywhere at all.
Nope.
And you were so frustrated. And I was like, dude, the ride just started. Like, we cannot, it's hot. Yeah. We cannot spend an hour and a half here. Like, if you want to come and just try the waterfall, we can do that. But that's not today. But so we tried for a long time to climb it. And then we get to the top and you just went over and looked at it at the downhill, because you're not going to hit it until it's a different line going down. You're not going to hit it until we're on our way back. And you just looked at it and you were like, okay. And then we kept riding. And then I'm behind you at that point in the ride when we return to it, which is probably like an hour and a half later. And you just went for it and flowed down it. And I just followed you and flowed down it. And I had never done it before. And it was awesome. And it was no big deal. And then the next trip I went out by myself, I didn't do it again. But I have started doing it again. And that may be because of a new bike, which I will be talking about later, and how maybe a new bike can add confidence and level us up. So that's something that we will be getting into later this pod for a little bit, and maybe as a standalone subject, because it's something I'm really interested in. So, but yeah, Arizona was really fun. And there's definitely things that I have on our checklist for the next time that you visit that I'm not doing by myself. Or if someone in Arizona wants to ride with me and show me some of these lines, there's a couple in Gold Canyon, a couple double black lines up on, well, I don't need to get into the details. If you ride Gold Canyon, you know where they are. But yeah, and there's a couple other lines on National that, you know, alternate lines that are a little bit, there's a bunch of them actually that I have not done yet that look pretty gnarly. So There's a lot there. There's a lot of progression that can happen there. And that's just, that's like their main riding area. That's like the city park. So it's pretty cool. If you like Black Diamond Tech. Yeah.
I remember those rides very distinctly. I just like, it's such a, you know, coming from the East Coast and being so used to the terrain that we have here, that was absolutely eye-opening to come into something like that. First of all, there's no dirt. Like it's just all what they call kitty litter, and I'm making air quotes there, but kitty litter is basically like this marbly like sand. And my goodness, it as you know, as it, we talked about in one of the podcasts earlier, like when I get to a trailhead, the first thing I do is I'm testing the trail. I'm testing the traction, the grip and turns, all this stuff, the grip on the rocks. I must have spent at least 10 or 20 minutes just trying to understand how my bike would react. Because for lack of a better word, I am somewhat underbiked, I guess. I guess by today's standards, my
it turns out mojo, that we have been underbiked. Yes. I didn't realize it until I've either now I'm either overbiked or adequately biked for what we do. I think a regular downcountry bike is underbiked by today's standards and by what we do. So yeah, please continue.
Yeah. So I think that was, but strangely enough, I actually felt really comfortable on most of the features, and we did some big stuff. I mean, you had mentioned the waterfall, but on our trip, and this is going back at least 2 years ago, we had done La Milagrosa, and then that whole Green Tucson. Mountain, that lemon drop. Yeah, that might have been the most technical ride I've ever done, and that was long. That was like a 5-6 hour day, and the tech there was
the
just
whole
unreal.
Ride in total. You would say that whole, if you took that whole ride in total, you would say that was the most technical ride? Really?
I think so, man. Just first of all, we started in the snow. I mean, the Green Mountain was like literally a glacier, and that had its challenges in itself. But we went through like probably like four different ecosystems on that ride.
Yes. And that's what I was going to say, four. Yeah.
Yeah. And each one of those places, right? You had Green Mountain, Bug Spring,
AZ.
Some kind of camp. Yeah. Yes. AZ something.
Prison camp.
Prison camp. Yes. And then La Milagrosa at the end, which was like desert trail. And
that's double black. Yeah.
Yeah. It was. And that had a waterfall in it too. That thing was sick. Yes.
Yep.
But that whole time, I never actually felt like, even though I was probably underbiked, I never felt like I was underbiked. I mean, that mojo it's pretty old. In today's standards, the Geo was just coming out, but I really enjoyed that bike there. I know I'm going to need a new bike soon, but you know, I'll be sad
to
see that
thing
mojo. Go.
So let's get into it. We're going to learn a little bit more about your podcast host today. We're going to be talking about the bikes that we have in our stable, which is just an old timey word for garage. But you know, we're guys that are in our late 40s. We've amassed some bikes. And each one has its own special purpose, and which of these do we recommend? Which of these could add to progression and skill, and how would it do that? And then if we could get a new bike in a different category, like obviously you would be interested in a new full suspension bike, but if you could get a new bike in any category, What would that be? But let's start with, because you already got into it, let's start with your current full suspension bike, which is you go ahead and take it over at this point here.
Man, yeah, it's a 2018 Ibis Mojo, and it is a 27.5, which is the wheel diameter. So most current bikes now, I think, are in that 29-inch category. But I just love my 27.5 wheels, and the only upgrade that I've done to that bike is,
what do you
I've
like about 27.5? Why don't oh. just interrupt? Why not a 29er? It's much easier to get a 29er.
Yeah, it really is.
29er is the default wheel size now.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Because when we first started out, it was like 26.
Yeah, so it was crazy. 26, and when 29ers came out, like everyone was in an uproar, like they were e-bikes. Like this is horrible. These things, they used to call them like clown bikes, right? You know, like I'll never ride those clown wheels, you know, look so crazy. And now 27.5 wheels look small, you know, like a lot of the 26 inch wheel on a full size mountain bike looks really tiny. So 29ers add a tremendous amount of rollover. It really helps keep momentum and rollover. And 27.5, while maybe just naturally better for shorter people, although I know a lot of people shorter than you that ride 29er.
Yeah, stick.
You know, it's supposed to be more playful. So what has your experience been on 29ers?
Well, my experience on 29ers has not been good, but, you know, that's also older Geo. So I am willing to kind of give it another shot. But I have to be honest, I just really love the playfulness and flickability of the 27.5. And the flickability, you know, you could argue that's less about the wheel and more about the frame, you know, having shorter chainstays and things of that nature make a bike more playful and flickable as well. If you ever watch me ride, and there's not much footage of me riding, but I tend to move a lot on my bike, like unnecessarily moving my body around, because that's just the way I like to ride. Yeah, it works for me. Yeah. It works for me really well. But I'm constantly shifting my body around and moving around. I'm hucking off of things. And to me, that wheel size and that bike lends itself really well to that kind of riding. You know, am I able to keep up with you on those long downhills with, you know, a lot of chunk? No, that's probably where I get hung up the most. You know, something like a stage 3 at Mount Penn, which is just a very straight downhill run, but it's full of these like baby's head rocks the whole way down. And my wheels do get caught up in that. It is hard to float over that. And obviously speed kills. And the faster that you're able to go kind of nullifies some of that. But it also gets it to be a lot more scarier too, because where your tires might be floating over things or kind of like rolling over things, I'm getting stuck in those little divots. If I'm not on my game and I'm not paying attention, looking really far ahead, you know, those little divots, they add up, and then you end up going like, you know, you lose a little bit here, you lose a little bit here, lose a little bit. I look up and you're like, you know, 5 minutes ahead on the trail, you know? So you do feel it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, all right. So the wheel size, I would love to see you be able to demo both like a modern 27.5 and also 29er. Hopefully we'll see some demo opportunities this summer. That's what I'm really hoping, that you can get a chance. And if you come out to Arizona, which hopefully we could do it at the end of the summer, you can definitely demo a pivot, you know, right from the factory over to South Mountain. So that would be pretty dope as well.
Yeah.
The bike itself is older geometry, and you were saying that the travel, you replaced the fork. So just real quick, what's the travel on that?
It came as a 130, 140. So 130 in the back, 140 in the front. And I had them upgrade the front shock to a 150. And that made a huge difference. I mean, I'm one of those people that I might not know the numbers. You know, I don't get into the numbers and like, oh, you know, this angle is at this and this chain stays this long. But I do feel the nuances of little changes, and, you know, 150, that might only be 10 millimeters. That's not even an inch, really. I definitely can feel the difference. And it's just that much more protection, you know, in case you screw up. And it's been nice. Yeah. What I love about that bike is the DW link. And that's going to be really hard to give up, because that thing climbs like a mountain goat. And I do like to climb. As much as I love blowing down a downhill, I do love to climb. As I understand it, you were telling me that the DW link is actually, that the patent is up. So who knows, maybe some other bike companies might just start to use that technology. Yeah.
Right now, you only really see it on Pivots and Ibis officially. And I think it was on Turner's back in the day. So, with the patent being up, then we might start to see some really cool designs come to be. And I will say, you know, I've ridden VW Link, and it is eye-opening. It is eye-opening. The support and the climbing prowess has really kind of blew me away. I'll get more into that in a little bit. But But I will say there's a lot of other bikes that are really well done. You know, maybe you're losing 1 or 5% on the climb, but the suspension is really well done and really comfortable. And I think whether or not it's DW Link or not, I think if you were to upgrade to a newer bike that's going to be slacker and have more travel, I think that was a really good chance that would unlock another level in you. I hate to think about you getting faster because you're already so fast, but it would make you faster. And it might make you more comfortable on jumps if I know dirt jumpers are pretty steep, but in my experience, the slacker the bike, the more confidence at speed, and then the more confidence in the air. From my small experience of riding something that's pretty slack, and maybe you would lose a little bit in the real slow speed tech, but I don't think you would because you'd still be on a pretty small bike because you're not a big guy. So I think our real tight technical stuff in the Northeast and probably in the Pacific Northwest and places like that, I think that you would still be able to have a pretty snappy bike. So I'm real excited for you. I'm manifesting a new bike for you. I write it in my journal that Sage gets a new bike. So
yeah, well, that would be awesome. Tell us about your full suspension bike.
I rode for years. I was riding, anyone that watched Trail Sage videos, I was riding a blue 2019 stump jumper, and that was a 150, 140 travel with, and it was firmly in the downcountry kind of range. I didn't realize it at the time, but that bike really leveled me up. I love that bike. I have a lot of miles on it, and there was anyone that's been on, into a bike shop knows that they're overstocked, and there were some really good deals on some awesome bikes. And my local shop, Keswick Cycles, has just always been awesome to me, and they really hooked me up, and I got a new Specialized Evo, and I was able to get the S-Works version, so it's like, it's the Cadillac. I mean, it's just like, it's lightweight. It's in between an enduro bike and a trail bike. It's got adjustable geometry. You can move the fork in three different places and the back in two different places. So I have it as slack as it'll go in the high position in the back. So it's kind of like, it's very, very long. It's very long. But so far, I haven't minded it on any of the tech. I haven't ridden it all that much. But it's been really fun, and I've really enjoyed it. It's an awesome bike. It's got electronic shifting and things like that, which are really nice. So I like the bike a lot.
You had mentioned you've actually mentioned it twice, but we should probably explain it. When you say down country, what is that?
It means a bike that has aggressive geometry, but not real aggressive suspension. So they're usually fairly slack, but then they're a little bit underbiked. So the suspension is going to be a little bit less. You have your trail bikes, which are usually around 150, 140, 130, 140. So like in the front, 150 or 140, and in the back, 130, maybe 140. If a cross country or a race bike is going to be like 120 in the front, 100 in the front, and maybe 100 in the back or 120. And then your enduros are going to be 160, 170 in the front, and maybe 160, 170 in the back. And then downhill, just infinitely larger.
So many options.
So there really are. And they're starting to blur the lines between all those categories so that you can get like a really capable cross-country bike that can handle a lot of tech. And the cross-country races are getting harder and harder. So and then you can get an enduro bike that's kind of like a trail bike, and that's what I got. And the Specialized with the Evo, they also have a bike called the Enduro, which has a lot more travel. The Evo is kind of like their mix between trail bike and enduro bike. So it's light enough to pedal around the mountain, but it's also aggressive enough to do some be more comfortable on some more advanced sort of features and whatnot. So it's a really fun bike. I'm very grateful. It's so far I'm really enjoying it. So what is your next bike in the garage?
I mean, if we're going by order of importance, then it's the road bike. But if we're going by fun, it's the single speed. Well, I guess you could put the fat bike in the fun category too, but unfortunately or fortunately, I don't want to insult any of my road riding friends because, some people actually really enjoy road riding. For me, I have a road bike for one purpose and one purpose only, to get stronger for mountain biking. And
this is a mountain bike podcast. This is not a road riding podcast. Yes. Yes. We are Well, we are pro mountain bike, and I am anti road bike. I'm just going to say it. I can't say that. All you roadies that are listening, it's cool. It's cool. You can come ride with us whenever you want. You know, it's much more fun on the dirt. I don't know. I'm digging a hole here, aren't I? We're losing subs. I can hear them ticking away. This guy.
I understand your path. You are probably one of the most passionate people I've ever met about mountain biking. And I've always appreciated that about you. I don't hate road riding as much as you do, although I find it really dangerous, especially around my area. Yeah. Which is around Philadelphia. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners probably have the same experience. It gets really dangerous, but it's an unfortunate necessity for me. If I want to keep up with you, I got to put the work in. And that means getting out onto the road bike at least 2, sometimes even 3 times a week, just so they can get my training in.
It's an old cross bike, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a cyclocross bike that I converted into a road bike. I've had dreams of like converting it back to like a cyclocross / gravel bike. I don't know that I would actually go that route, but there is something very exciting about getting a bike on the road and then taking it right to a trailhead and then just like hitting the single track with the same bike. That is something that's exciting, but I don't know that I would spend the money to make that happen, especially when I need a new mountain bike. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, you have a road bike too. I mean, it doesn't go outside.
We are manifesting abundance. There's going to be abundance. We're getting all the bikes. We're getting all the bikes that we need, all the bikes that we want. Honey, we're getting more bikes. Just what she wants to hear.
Hey, if it comes to the house, I'm in.
If it comes to the house, just buy a new house, dude. What's the problem? I was always anti-gravel even. I'm just a pure mountain biker, and I felt like gravel was mountain biking for roadies. But then we were talking the other day, not on the pod, which should be against the rules, should be illegal. We shouldn't be allowed to have any conversations that aren't shared with our listeners. And you made a really good point that, you know, it's the ultimate underbike. Ride your road bike, this gravel bike, to a trail, and then you ride. Now you're riding a green or a blue trail, and it's really challenging. You have no suspension. You're on really skinny tires, and you got to use all your skill and fitness and strength to get through that. And then you get back on the road and ride home. You never get in the car. So that sounds pretty cool if you have a place to do that. I know some people ride Valley Forge Park around here. I did that once with Graham, and it looked pretty fun. So that was kind of cool. I do have a road bike. I'm looking at it right now. It's permanently attached to my trainer. I think if I were to take it off, the entire trainer and bike would just disintegrate. I just think they would just fall apart. I have over 10,000 miles on that trainer. I've taken that bike has been outside for, I think, 44 miles, and I have probably like 10,500 trainer miles on there. So, it is completely sweat attached to the house. If I ever sell this house, the trainer will be attached with the house. Yeah. Yeah. You don't get a mountain bike. You get a rusty old trainer. But man, I got the ERG trainer. I got a Wahoo kicker, and I use Trainer Road, and it's an awesome workout. It's an awesome workout. So I bought that road bike years and years ago. My business partner convinced me to get one because he was a roadie. And I did a couple of real short rides. I didn't like it. It went into the shed forever. My wife's like, why don't we sell that thing? And I said, well, you're not going to get anything for it. I may as well hold on to it. And then fast forward a few years later, and someone told me about the trainer. And I had a friend who was getting really, really strong riding a trainer, and I wanted to keep up. And so I bought the trainer, and I just got really into it. So I ride the trainer probably at least twice a week, and they're brutal training rides, but they're awesome. So I do really appreciate the road bike that I have. It's just attached permanently to a trainer. I don't think I would ever put a wheel back on it and ride it around. And I didn't like it. I didn't like riding on the road. I thought it was boring. I mean, haven't tried it in a really long time, but.
Yeah, you have actually two things. One's a bike and one's not a bike, but you actually add two things to your training process. You have a pump track in your backyard, which is amazing for training, but you also have a rip row.
A Rip Row, yes, I do. The Rip Row is like a pump track simulator, but this isn't the fitness pod. This isn't the fitness pod. If we start going down this road, we're not going to finish the bike stable. We got more bikes in the stable. We will get to the fitness pod where we will talk about...
The Rip Row is not considered a bike. It's close.
No, it's definitely not considered a bike. It has bike handlebars. I get a picture of it. I'll get a picture of it when we do the fitness pod. I'll have a picture of it. It's got handlebars on it, but no, it's a rowing device. It's a rowing machine and it has a seat, but you don't sit on it. So definitely not a bike. It has no wheels.
Yes. It's like a sled.
Yes. It's more like a sled. Yeah. All right. So we went road bike. You mentioned fat bike and single speed. So pick one. Tell me what you love about it. Tell me what you don't love about it. Let's hear it.
There's nothing that I don't love about either of those. I mean, they are, man, well, you and I both spent a lot of time on the single speed, and there's a really special place in my heart for that single speed. I'll probably never sell that thing. You know what? There is one thing I don't like about it, though. It's very old Geo. Whenever I get on it, I'm just instantly reminded about, you know, how far the industry has come since, you know, we started riding that thing. But you know what? It's also a really good way to get back to basics. You know, you get on that thing and
I get on top of my single speed. Sorry. We have the same frame.
Yeah.
And I get on top of that bike. I'm used to sitting, a modern bike, you sit like inside it. You feel like you're sitting inside of it. And I get on top of that single speed and I feel like I'm sitting on top of it. I feel like I'm on stilts, like I'm 25 feet off the ground, like the Wicked Witch of the West, you know, just like straight back. Like it does not feel comfortable or safe. Yes. And I'm like, how did we ride these every day? Like every week, this was it. This was it. And yeah, it just feels like it just wants to pitch you over the handlebars so easily and so quickly. You got to really be on your game for that. We upgraded these single speeds as much as possible. Tell the listeners what you've done to your single speed to try to make it tech worthy.
Yo, so I've done a couple different really interesting things. One, I'll start out with the one that I don't recommend for anyone, but I actually cut the seat tube probably about like 2 inches to get a longer dropper in there. And this is a titanium frame. So it was like a pretty big deal to like, you know, cut this thing down a little bit. But that was doing that allowed me to get a longer dropper in there. I was able to get, I think it's about like a 120 now or 140.
Still not that much. Yeah. What were you, dropping before?
What were you dropping? Like 100 or 80? Yeah. It was, basically
like what they put on road bikes now.
Yeah,
that's what they put on gravel bikes and road bikes now. Yeah,
So that, but you know what? That extra little bit made a huge difference. I love it. The other upgrade that I put on it was I did a headset offset, so it basically added about 2 degrees to the angle of the front fork. Which again, you know, I'm you someone really that notices that. Like you could I could really instantly feel that. I actually take that single speed on some of the most crazy tech that we can do at Mount Penn with no issue. And I don't know that I would have done that without that 2 degree headset adjustment. So that was pretty cool. The other secretive thing that I've done that I'm kind of testing out still is I've added handlebar extensions. I've had these carbon bars on this bike for ages. And, you know, as a YouTuber, I don't make that much money. So, you know, I'm not going to go out and buy another carbon bar. I bought these little. So I bought these little extenders. They add probably about an inch and a half to each side. And I got to tell you, it's made a world of difference because on a single speed, you know, we're cranking on those bars pretty hard. And so the more narrow it is, the harder it is to get that leverage. And so adding that little inch to inch and a half on the ends of the bars made a huge difference. Yeah, big time.
Yeah. Yeah. So because on a single speed, you're pulling it's a rowing motion really. And a lot of times you have one speed and it's hard and you're cranking and you're really using your upper body. You're really pulling with your arms and your chest. And so the wider the handlebar, the more leverage you have. It's really a full body workout. I mean, single speeding is absolutely if you want to go out and get trashed in an hour and a half of climbing and hills and whatnot. Like, you know, that it's a great vehicle for that. I think it's fun. There's just something so natural about single speeding. Yeah. We'll do an episode on single speeding because that's our base and our lineage. And we still have a passion and a real sweet spot for the single speeding. Yeah. We don't ride them that much anymore. The full suspension bikes are so capable and you could do so much on them. But single speeding, I think, still has its place. And I don't know how many people have them in the garage. Let us know. Do you have a single speed in your garage? RideAndLaugh1@gmail.com. Did you used to? Or comment in the YouTube. Do you have a single speed? Did you used to have a single speed? Are you interested? You know, it's as far as getting another bike, if you want a backup bike, that's the cheapest kind you can get. You get like an aluminum frame single speed. There's not all that much going on there. Everyone needs a backup bike. Anyone that mountain bikes knows you have to have a second bike. Like once you get a first bike, it's very important to get a second bike so that you have a backup. And then your backup needs a backup. I mean, you know, just in case. I've had two bikes go down. So you probably should have, I would think, three bikes. And then, maybe something for, you know, dirt jumping or a pump track. So, you know, maybe four. And then obviously something to train on. So that you're looking at five. So, yeah, no, it's not an expensive hobby at all. It's fine, honey. There's no reason we can't buy a new house. Does it come with five bikes?
Does it come?
Yeah. So, all right. So the single speed, I also have a single speed. If we want to go back and forth, I also have a single speed. We both have Carver 420s. They're older frames. They're titanium. We both did belt drive for a little bit. You stopped belt drive. And I stopped belt drive for a different reason, because of my size and my weight and weight to power. And I think the fact that it's a titanium frame, I was flexing the frame. We should get into this on the single speed episode, but I was flexing the frame too much and the belt started to slip. So I think belt drives are made more for commuters than for single speeders. Though if you're lightweight, I don't know, Sage, you had one, but we can get into that more on the single speed episode. And then we both ride a geared hardtail, but they're very, very different geared hardtails. What is your geared hardtail?
It's another Carver. I love that brand. They're up in Maine. A really great guy, Forrest.
Small company.
Very small company. I don't think he actually builds these bikes in-house, but I just love their customer service. I love Forrest. I love supporting him. It's a fully carbon fat bike. We're talking the frame, the cranks, the wheels. It is the most
pimped out fat bike that you will see. It is lightweight. He has a absolute rocket on this thing. And so when you say fat bike, we're talking 4-inch tires, 26-inch wheels, 4-inch tires. So it feels like a 27.5. So it feels natural. How aggressive is it? And what does a fat bike feel like on the trail? Cause you don't just ride this in snow. You ride this on the trail. What is
all year?
Yeah. What is that experience like?
It's, you know what, Danny, it's now that we have a fork on it, because you had a fat bike at 1.2 and you had I convinced you to put a fork on that pretty quickly because, man, those things are like giant balloons just bouncing on the trail. But that fork kind of nullifies that a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you said it best, man. It's definitely pimped out. I mean, if Exhibit still had his like pimp the ride show, this is the bike that he would have came up with. It is just completely pimped out.
He would have put a TV on it or something like that, right? He always put TVs in the trunks and things like that. I never understand. It's like, who wants a TV in the trunk? But probably no one remembers that show. I don't recommend back and watching it. It's a lot of TVs in trunks. But yes, it's a pimped out ride. What is the experience of riding a fat bike on trails? Because I always thought it was super fun, and I always felt like it kind of just smoothed the trail out. You know, like I got a lot of confidence when I used to ride my fat bike on trails.
Yeah. If you can dial in that right air pressure, right, and you have a fork, it does fill in the gaps. And we talked about my 27.5, like kind of sinking into like little ruts. The fat bike, it's the tires are so big that, you know, you don't fall into those same ruts. And so I don't want to say it smooths it out, but it's definitely a different experience. And the traction is, I think that's why I'm so fast on it, because it is super light. It's lighter than my full suspension. I think it comes in around like 28 pounds, man. Wow. That thing just rockets up climbs like it's like no one's business. I don't know that it's aggressive enough to be considered an aggressive hardtail because the geo is probably not there. But I certainly ride it like one. But speaking of aggressive hardtails, you got one, right? You got an aggressive hardtail.
I do. And I love it. A very, very different bike than your fat bike. But I will say that your fat bike, does not have aggressive geometry, but neither does your full suspension, and you're awesome on that. So yeah, I'm so curious to see what happens when you ride a bike that really does have aggressive geometry. But you're awesome on that fat bike. And, so aggressive hardtail, this is something that I feel like I manifested this bike. I feel like I've manifested all my bikes. I just start dreaming about them, and then an opportunity comes, and the abundance is there. And I can afford it, all of a sudden. And my wife's always been awesome and supportive, and she knows I love it. She's like, "You're going to use it. If this is your passion, you're going to use it. So get the bike you want." And so my aggressive hardtail is a Banshee Paradox V3, and it is. I watched a lot of Hardtail Party on YouTube.
Yes.
And this guy loves hardtails. Obviously, the name of his channel is Hardtail Party. You've probably seen it if you're listening. If you haven't, it's a really good channel. And he's constantly testing hardtails, mostly aggressive hardtails. And he rides in Sedona, and he rides all sorts of trails and technical stuff. And this was a few years ago. And he settled on the Banshee Paradox V3, and he was like, this is going to be my personal bike. And that, so he kept testing bikes, but that was his main bike. And so I was like, well, that's the bike I want to get to. And I also knew a guy around here who got one right around the same time, just a guy on Strava, and we had ridden with before, Ryan Stanky. He got one, and he loved it. And he's a fast dude. And he was, he was like, "Yeah, dude, I give it a big thumbs up." So I went ahead and built one up. And it's super, super slack, and it's got a big travel fork on the front. I don't remember exactly. I think it's a 160 on the front, 170 on the front.
Something like that, yeah.
Probably like a 64 degree head angle, but it's a hardtail. So it's kind of like that downcountry we were talking about. The shape of it, when you ride it and you're going downhill, it feels like it just wants to go fast, and it can get away from you because the front is party and the back is business. Maybe that's backwards. I don't know. But I mean, it's very easy to just start getting too fast, and then it's a hardtail in the back, and you're starting to catch rocks and get caught up, or you might just be going like light speed, and then all of a sudden you hit something hard. And it feels like it should be a full suspension bike. And I've broken wheels on it several times because I'm hucking on this thing because it's so cool. It's so fun. It's so comfortable. And it's a hardtail. So I finally put a tire insert into the back. So hopefully that fixes that problem. But yep. I used to ride in Philadelphia, the big city park here is Wissahickon. And on my way to work, I used to stop there and ride there almost once a week. And I would single speed there. I'd ride my geared bike. And getting something like an aggressive hardtail, which is really fun, and you still have hardtail, so it doesn't climb as well as like maybe an XC hardtail, but it's still fairly light, and it still has that like that when you put the power down, you go because it's a hardtail. So it's a really, really good way. I think bikes like this are really good ways to mix up your local trails that you're riding, so you can single speed on the trail, or you can take your aggressive hardtail or your fat bike and get excited about the same trails that you're riding. The first thing I would say is ride your regular loop the other direction, and it's a whole new trail. Okay. And then you do that a few times, then if you're passionate and have the means and you love mountain biking like Sage and I do, you start collecting different bikes. And it's really fun. I mean, I love what we have in our stable. We do turn to the full suspensions the most, but we have some really fun bikes in there. And I think they've added to our progression. I think they've added to our skill. It takes a lot more, a different type of skill to ride a hardtail, right? Wouldn't you say that there's a step up in effort? Well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I mean, what would you say are the benefits of riding a hardtail?
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Because that's another standalone episode. Probably.
I was just about to say that's a standalone episode. I mean, there's just so many advantages to learning on a hardtail. And I think a good conversation for us to have, you and I, is probably a conversation on which is better for your first bike, a hardtail or full suspension. Because there are really good points on either side of that, But yeah, we should leave that for a different episode. Yeah, that would be a really good one.
All right. So one more bike. If you would add another bike to the stable, any dream bike, not necessarily dream bike, but just like, you know, random bike that, you know, no budget. What would you add? What kind of bike?
I would probably, you and I had gone back and forth about this a lot, but I still really want an aggressive hardtail. Like I don't know. It almost seems wasteful because I have the two hardtails, but I don't know. I just think I'd really have fun on an aggressive hardtail. I mean, I know I need a full suspension, but if I had a throwaway bike, money was not a thing, I probably would lean toward an aggressive hardtail, maybe like a Ragley.
Oh, that's very interesting.
The Umbop, yeah, or something like that. But yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd like to know if you know, from our listeners, you know, what kind of bikes they would recommend for me, you know, for yeah, either the replacement for a full suspension, or, you know, do they have, you know, what are their bikes that they have on their wish list? You know, I'd love to know, you mm-hmm know, what is it? Ride and Laugh One at Gmail, right?
Yes.
Let's get them coming. I'd love to hear the suggestions.
Yeah. 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 Definitely. Suggestions for Sage 27.5 full suspension bike or 29er full suspension bike. You know, he loves the DW Link. So what, you know, what should he be looking to demo? And what kind of bikes do you guys have? What kind of bikes do you have in your bike stable? What's your favorite bike? And what are you looking to add? What would be a dream ad? No budget dream ad bike, you know, that you got your eye on. And let's manifest this stuff. You know, hey, let's write it down in that journal. I've said, you write it down, you write down the bike you want, and you visualize it, and then you bring in the emotion of riding it and the emotion of seeing it in your garage. Because for me, that's a big, yes, part of it, is just pulling into, yes, the garage and seeing my bikes there, like, just like, yeah, there they are. I can't wait to ride, you know, just awesome. You know, you put it on the rack in the morning or the night before, and just, yeah, I'm ready to ride. I'm ready to go. If I were going to pick a dream bike that with no budget, you know, it would be irresponsible, I think I would try a full downhill bike, like a full downhill.
Yes.
And because I've been riding bigger travel bikes lately, and I'm so blown away with how much fun they are. You know, I feel like we've been underbiked. It's another episode, underbike versus overbiked, and, you know, the differences and the benefits. But yeah, I'd be very curious to take a full downhill bike to a bike park and see, yeah, what that felt like. I'd be very,
that dual
very
crown.
Curious,
so. Yeah.
Yeah,
that'd be a lot of,
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, the whole thing, you know, like, just that doesn't need to pedal at all. Just like totally slacked out, just tremendous amount of travel, just, you know, heavy, stable. Who's got a downhill bike? Let us know. What does that feel like? What kind of confidence does that give you at the bike park? Where else do you ride it? And are you happy that you got one? Or is an enduro bike enough? You know, so what do you think? Ride and Laugh One at Gmail. Let us know about these bikes. And YouTube comment, you know, let us know. Just a quick note. Yeah, man, I got a downhill bike and it's awesome. Or no, it's a waste of money. I could do everything on my enduro bike or my trail bike. I don't need an enduro bike. I got my trail bike. I mean, you can go any different direction here. Let's see. Mountain bike gratitude of the week. What are you thinking about this week, Seiji?
Man, I am, just to go back to what we started the show with, which is just, I'm so grateful for all our supporters. I know I had, before we launched this to the public, I had actually launched it to my Patreon tribe, and man, those guys and gals came through and just really gave us some really good feedback. And, I'm just so grateful for all of them. They keep this engine running, and, I just want to say thank you. Thank you to all my Patreon subscribers and members. They're just awesome.
My gratitude of the week is going to be very similar. I really appreciate everybody listening and the feedback that we've gotten. And I have to throw out a special thank you to Johnny Yu at Mountain Bike Q&A. That was just so cool of him to listen to a few podcasts and say, like, yeah, you know, these guys got something. And yeah, he had already interviewed Sage, so I was up and I had a great conversation with him, and the chat was really funny. And I encourage everyone to go check that out. But it was really, really nice of Johnny to see something in us, and he kept saying it. He was very, very flattering. He said, you know, this is, you guys got something here. This is a really fun listen, and there's not anything else like this right now. It's unique, and keep going. And, you know, we're really new at this, and so that means a lot to someone that's been doing this for a while, and he's successful. He has a nice following, so thank you a lot. Yeah, Johnny, I really appreciate the time you took to interview me, and all the kind words that you had to say, and everyone that responded to that to that webcast really kindly. It's nice. It's nice to hear. So we have so much gratitude to all of our listeners. If you're still listening, we appreciate it. You are definitely one of us. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate you ranking, liking, and subscribing. We appreciate you turning on all your notifications, anything that helps the algorithm, and certainly on your podcast player, giving us a 5-star review and listening. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts. So much gratitude. We're having so much fun. We got a lot more fun stuff planned. We're looking forward to it. You're a mountain biker. We're a mountain biker. You love riding. We love riding. Thank you again. Go ride your bikes, ride and laugh.
See you, everybody.